Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Hey, I am broadcasting from a brand spanking new studio. No longer do I have to sit under a roof that leaks, listen to barking dogs, or deal with screaming teenagers. Well, that's not quite true. I still have to deal with barking dogs and screaming teenagers, but the roof isn't leaking. I'm in a brand new spot. I'm happy. I am ready to rock, so let's all hold hands and be legally good together, shall we? Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So in other words, my darling angels, if you get upset about anything, don't blame it on the forums. You come to moi, yours truly, and I'll take care of it for you. I'll make sure you're happy again. Tonight, my co-host, Michael in Michigan, has come down with a bug. That's all I know. I will go into deep investigation later on, but he's not quite feeling up to par. So, Michael, we love you. We miss you, and we hope you'll get back with us real, real soon. Next week, you're on, buddy. There's no more taking time off. I'm docking your pay. Also joining us later will be Levi Page and a gentleman that whom we all absolutely love and want to hear from quite often, and that is Chuck Cox, Susan Cox's father. And we'll be talking about the anniversary of Susan's disappearance. We'll chit-chat about a whole bunch of other things today as well, but first, we do have a new sponsor. Today's Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Now, this is a great organization. Paws for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. In other words, you take somebody that has PTSD, you give them a dog to train that helps with their problem, and they train a dog that helps one of their comrades, one of their fellow veterans, with combat-related injuries. It is a 501(c) charity, so I would encourage you to please check out their website, www.pawsforpurplehearts.org. That's P-A-W-S for purplehearts.org. I'm going to read you a quote. "If one day the speed kills me, do not cry because I was smiling." That quote is attributed to, and I hate saying this, the late Paul Walker. Paul Walker's last tweet was November 29th, and he said, "The boys are back. Will you be ready?" And then they had a picture of Fast and Furious 7. Now, he's really known for his Fast and Furious movies with Vin Diesel and cars and speed and all of that. But he's quite versatile. He's been in a lot of things like Flags for Our Fathers on HBO, Running Scared, She's All That, Pleasantville, Meet the Deedles, Varsity Blues. I could go on and on. He was incredibly versatile. He was working on Fast and Furious 7, and not sure if that's completed yet, but I did read somewhere that it will come out. They will release it at some point. So if it's not completed, they will complete it. Will Ferrell tweeted this out, which I thought was very, very good. Will Ferrell, former of Saturday Night Live, he said, "RIP to Roger Rodas, the guy who died with Paul Walker. Prayers go out to you as well. Please retweet because he was human." Now, the gentleman driving the car was Roger Rodas. Both Roger and Paul were veteran race car drivers. They knew speed. They knew how to handle speed. Although I've been reading about this Porsche they were driving, and people have said it's a very scary car. They're not supposed to die so young. Both of them were around 40, professional race car drivers, like I said. And I don't understand why this had to happen. Was it meant to be? Was it Rodas doing something wrong? Did something go wrong with the car? I don't know. But it makes me sick, and it just made my stomach curdle when I saw the pictures, because they slammed into, I believe it was a pole or a post, going full speed, and the car just burst into flames. And it was they were right by their place of business that Rodas owned. It was a place where they made special car parts for fast cars, one of those type of things. They were right there. And I've read that Rodas's 8-year-old son tried to help put out the fire with fire extinguishers. There were a lot of people around when it happened. They saw it, and there was nothing they could do. It is, again, another Hollywood tragedy. Levi Page, you're calling in. Let me see if I can pull you up. There you are. Levi Page, can you add anything to that? Do you know any more information about the Paul Walker crash at all?
No, I don't, but I was watching some of the coverage on television today, Tricia, and, you know, we hear often about how these Hollywood stars are, you know, they're self-centered, but this is someone who was a very nice person. He had just got done attending a charity event when he died, and or was on his way to one. I'm not quite positive, but he was very charitable. I was watching the coverage, and someone had pointed out the fact that one time he overheard a conversation, a military vet that was about to be deployed overseas, and he heard him talking, and he was talking about how he wanted to get engaged to right before he got deployed. And Paul Walker overheard that and anonymously helped him purchase an engagement ring. So shows you what type of person he is, that he cares about people, and this is so sad. And not only him, but the person that was driving the vehicle as well. My prayers and thoughts go out to both of their families.
Thank you. And both of these young men had children. Paul Walker's daughter, I believe, was 15, is posting on Facebook about how her father is and will always be her hero. There is so much heart-wrenching information about this case. It, again, another tragedy. Two lives senselessly lost. Maybe we'll never know what happened, but hopefully we can find out. And if it was a mechanical problem, let's pray they can fix that stupid thing. That car did look scary to drive. You should look it up and see it. And these guys were professionals. That's what kills me. It just, they knew what they were doing, and they still lost control and died. Just awful. Okay, we're going to move on. Susan Cox Powell, and I don't even like saying the name Powell. I'm going to call her Susan Cox. Susan Cox was last seen December 6, 2009. On February 5, 2012, their own father, Josh, murdered them, his children, two boys, Charlie and Braden, killed them and blew up the house. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare for people who didn't know them. You can only imagine what the family was going through. Now, all through of this, Susan's parents and her whole family have handled themselves with dignity and grace. The same cannot be said for the Powell family. Not all of them. There are some that have been absolutely wonderful, but Stephen Powell and a few others, just despicable human beings. Now, yesterday I was speaking to Susan's father, Chuck Cox, and he started to say, well, there's not much I can say, and I stopped him right there, and I said, Mr. Cox, it's important to us to hear from you, no matter what you have to say, because everybody cares so much for you and your family, and I know I do speak for everybody when I say that. Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio, Mr. Cox. How are you tonight?
Just fine.
Good. Mr. Cox, thanks again for joining us tonight. I know you have a busy schedule and you have a lot of things going on. But let's talk just a moment here, and we'll have Levi Page jump in here in a bit. First, questions from the chat room before we get into what's going on. Is there anything new in the case, anything new about Susan's whereabouts or anything along those lines?
No, not really. The West Valley City Police, as you know, have ceased their active investigation. The case is still open as a missing persons case, and what that means is they're not going out looking for anything, but if they got a tip that they need to search an area, then they would actually go out and do that, but it has to be a credible tip. They weren't going to just go out and search because of, you know, the offhand I got a feeling type thing. So they're not looking for that. But they will follow up on some tips.
Tell me your relationship with the West Valley Police. Did you sue them? Give us that background again. Bring us up to date on that. I apologize. My memory is gone with all kinds of parts of my body as I age. So if you could fill us in what happened between you and the West Valley Police.
Yeah, I can't really say anything about the legalities of it. My attorney, Ann Bremner, is our primary attorney, and she'll be dealing with all that stuff. But
understood.
I don't know that they're being sued right now. I'm not sure exactly where all that is.
Understood. Thank you very much. We won't ask you that again, and I truly appreciate you telling me that. Let's talk a little bit about, first of all, before we get again, I have one more question here. Jennifer Grant, that's Josh Powell's sister, wrote a book called A Light in Dark Places. I did not read it, and I did want to ask your thoughts on it. I was thinking about it, but I was wondering if it was a book you approved of.
Well, yeah, Jennifer Graves wrote that book, and it was very enlightening to see her perspective of everything, and I learned a lot of things from it about her family life and the life that Josh would have grown up with, and it's just a different slant on things. There's some things she remembers differently, incidents that she reports on there that are a little slightly different from the way I remembered how they happened when Susan first went missing. But more, I guess the biggest thing on it is she goes into quite a bit of detail about her feelings and what it was like to grow up in that household.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Let me just give a little bit of background in case somebody is just joining us. We have Chuck Cox on the phone with us. He is Susan Cox's father. Susan's husband, Josh Powell, is basically, we know he took Susan and killed her in December of 2009. And then in February of 2012, he murdered his two children in the state of Washington while he was on a supervised visitation with him. And Josh's sister wrote a book, and I've always wondered, because Josh's father, Stephen Powell, is a piece of work. He's been in prison for voyeurism and all kinds of creepy things. He claimed that Susan and he were having an affair. I mean, he is the definition of creepy old man. What did Jennifer reveal that surprised you about growing up in the Powell family with Stephen Powell?
Well, actually, it was more along the lines of how she remembered related incidents that I had learned about, some of them through the pages of his parents' divorce, of Lena, Terry and Steve Powell's divorce proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of counted on those and things. It's the way she felt as she found out what her dad was into and how her mom and her split and how the family became divided over this whole issue and the things that Steve Powell had done and with the family. And it's in a lot more detail than what you could glean from just the few pages of court documents, although there were 300 pages of those, but that we got that kind of led us down a path. But she kind of explained it, filled in the background on those things about what she went through and what the family had gone through. And it was interesting, and it kind of helped me to understand somewhat how she felt and where she was in all this.
And so basically, when did they find out that their father was a pervert creep? Was it when she was older, younger, and that's why they got divorced?
Yeah, it appears that it was like she was in her teenage years, probably 14 or 15, when it became known to her. And her mom suggested, or had told her, I guess, from what I remember anyway, that her dad was making some poor choices, and she didn't want to go along with that. So anyway, it just kind of was interesting to get that perspective.
Okay, it sounds like a book I will definitely read. It's by Josh's sister, Jennifer Grant, and it's called A Light in Dark Places. So if anybody's interested in the Susan Cox Powell case, sounds like that might be a great book to get some background information about the monster we know as Josh and Stephen.
I think that's a correct way to put it, context to put it in. It tells you a whole lot more background information on the family, and it was well worth reading.
That's good to know. One other little thing I want to discuss, and that is you're convinced now that Josh's other brother, who committed suicide, has helped or helped with taking care of Susan. Is that correct?
Well, we certainly believe he's, yeah, he's involved. We know he was involved. We know he was, from what the police have revealed, and frankly what they revealed to the press when they released the information, they detail a lot of information about his involvement in the car that he drove and tried to get rid of, and you know, all that stuff that leads us to believe that he definitely was deeply involved in whatever happened.
Whatever they did to Susan. Yeah, right. Awful, awful family. Now, well, there is something coming up, and it is a remembrance for Susan and her boys. You're making it a remembrance for Susan and her two boys, and it's a candlelight vigil. It's called the Christmas Box Angel Monument. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was Richard Paul Evans who wrote the book, the Christmas Box, and there's a movie by that title. And he had written this, and I guess it's mostly fictional, but he wrote this novel, and it talks about it's about a woman who elderly woman who loses a child at the age of three, and it goes on. It's an interesting story, but based on that. There was supposedly an angel statue in Salt Lake City Cemetery, and that where this woman went to remember her child that she lost at age three, and with the reception of the book and everything, they went to find out where was this Christmas box angel statue, and
mm-hmm.
apparently had been destroyed, wasn't there
oh,
anymore.
Oh no.
So Richard Paul Evans had a statue commissioned and placed in Salt Lake City Cemetery, remembering that. And now every December 6th, people who have lost children go to the Christmas Box Angel there in Salt Lake City, and now there's like about 150 or something,
mm-hmm.
over 100 statues across the country. And every December 6th at 7 p.m., they go there to remember their little ones who they've lost. And so there's a candlelight vigil. And how unique or how, you know, odd it is that on December 6th was the last time we saw Susan.
And it just happened to be that day that this is going to happen. So in Salt Lake City, let me get the information here. It is going to be at the Salt Lake City Cemetery December 6th at about 7 p.m. our time, Mountain Time. So if you want to remember Susan, or if you know any other small children that have been lost, that's a very good time to remember them. And I'm sure you'll meet a lot of other people if you go to the Salt Lake City Cemetery. And you want to check in your area if you happen to have a Christmas Box Angel Monument. You very well could. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the interview. But Mr. Cox, I want to ask you about the custody laws in the state of Washington. Now, what happened was Josh Powell was allowed to see his sons under supervision in Washington State. That meant he had a social worker or somebody designated to watch and make sure that his children, his two boys, were safe. And this all happened after it came out that his father, Stephen Powell, was this perverted scumbag. So his children were taken away, yet he was still able to get the kids in the house, lock out the social worker, and murder your grandchildren. It was appalling to everybody that Josh Powell had anything to do with those children. They never should have been anywhere near him, or at the very least, it should have been at a common area where they're checked before they come in, where there are police officers or some sort of protection right there for the children. Now, you have been involved in changing the custody laws in the state of Washington. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, basically, it's the policy that was being pursued by Department of Social Health Services in Washington State. They were following their policy, which is reunification of the child is their first priority, with the natural parents, and then the best interest of the child is also in there. But the first priority is the reunification, and that's the part that didn't make sense here. And so we want them to swap those two priorities to make best interest of the child the first thing, which we feel is their responsibility. So we have a law that basically it has been before our Congress, and I think it's waited for the state Senate, and I think we got caught up in all the money issues that went on this past year is what I think that sidetracked it. But it's still there, and it so far it's passed. And but what it would do is would make it that if one of the parents goes missing and the other person is a person of interest, a suspect, whatever you want to call them, they have some interest in the case, or the police have not absolved them of everything, mm-hmm. that until those questions are answered, that parent does not have custody of that child. That's not far enough for me, but it's a starting point, and hopefully, you know, that will be passed. And other states are watching what we're doing here, and hopefully that will make something so that a law in several states where you can't just cause the disappearance of your spouse and thereby gain custody of the children. That's just ridiculous.
It just seems ridiculous that we even have to have somebody to try and change this law. It should already be there. I mean, it's just stupid. Levi Page, our good friend of the show and a good friend of everybody who is into true crime and discusses true crime on the Internet, we love having him on the show. You've been sitting there so quietly and so lovely. And Levi, do you have any comments or questions? I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yes, I do. First of all, I think that it's great that something is being done about the child custody situation, because I've seen cases where, you know, this man was a suspect in the murder of his wife. His wife was trying to escape from him. I watched a video right before we went to air about the secret will that Susan had made right before she fell victim to this man that she, you know, was supposed to protect her, but instead he's harming her. He's preying on her. And I'm glad something is being done, because I've seen cases where far less has gone on in a household. And what they do is they give you supervised visits, but it's in a neutral location. The children should not have went to him. If he wanted to see the children, he should have went to them at a neutral location. They should have never been at that rental house. Which was very surprising that the courts and CPS, Child Protective Services, allowed that in the first place. But, you know, Tricia, when all this news broke with some of the new details being released about the case, it happened in the late spring, early summer, and a lot were focused on the Jodi Arias trial. So not many people may know that some of these new details, but apparently the police had not only been focused on Josh Powell, but they had been focused on his brother, Michael Powell, and Susan's father.
Right.
Chuck pointed that out earlier, and the reason why they focused on him was after Josh had killed himself and murdered his children, he left everything to Michael Powell, and they had also discovered that Michael Powell left his car at a junkyard weeks after Susan vanished, and he had not given a reasonable explanation for that. They also it's also known that he killed himself after his brother did, which is also interesting. What did he have to hide? And that speaks to the fact that they have not told where Susan is. If these people know where she is, the fact that they did not even tell Susan's parents, her family, her friends, where she is after they killed themselves, that shows you that they just have no conscience. They have no feeling or empathy for anyone else. And one thing that I wanted to ask about that we haven't touched on, and Chuck, thank you for joining us, but one thing I wanted to ask you about is the motive for Josh Powell to do this. Apparently, what has been reported, he had been having an affair, and he had solicited a woman that he was paying. He had given her $800+ to have sex with him right before Susan vanished. What do you know about her, and has she been able to tell the police anything about what he might have said? Did she know he was married, or was she unaware of him and his marriage and didn't know?
Yeah, I had just learned about that probably a couple weeks ago, you know, that people had dug through the stuff the police released and brought up that. But the police have West Valley City have withheld the person's name and contact information and everything. I mean, this was news to us, and we don't have anything yet that the West Valley City Police have released to us that we can even have a private investigator work on, because they've held all the they redacted the files so much that you can't tell exactly who that person is or anything. So that's information we're trying to get from them.
Yeah, apparently all that I've been able to read, she claims that she didn't know he was married. But this certainly tells you his motivations. If he's having an affair behind her back, then this shows you his motive for wanting to get rid of her. And another thing that I found interesting is that I read that the two brothers, Josh and Michael, were communicating with each other using a computer encryption program.
Yes.
Have you heard anything else about that, how they did this, exactly what it was?
All I heard is that they were communicating and with encryption that was virtually not breakable, because going computer to computer with encryption, and it wasn't recorded anywhere. It was just there. And so it was kind of you could catch it midstream and find out what was going on if they were connected, but you couldn't figure out what they were saying. And I'm not sure where all that's going. I know the police are still working on computers, trying to decode all of Josh and Steve's and all the computers that they've taken. But, they were being very clandestine about all that they were doing.
It would be nice if this woman, thank you, Levi, that was interesting. I have missed that about the woman, and that makes perfect sense. I hope maybe she could come forward, Mr. Cox, to give you some idea of what was going on in Josh's head, just to help you. She may know something that she doesn't realize she knows. And that's what's so frustrating, because you want to find your daughter and find out what happened. Joining us. I'm sorry. Was that Levi, or is that Mr. Cox?
No, I said that's our concern. We want to know what she knows, or what she may know that she doesn't know she knows.
Exactly. She could literally hold the key to this whole case and not even realize it. And maybe she will eventually come forward to you. Have you ever? I know you've only just found out about this, but have you thought about making a plea to her to come forward to you?
Yeah, we're working on that right now with our private investigators working on that.
Okay, well, if you need any help getting information out, let us know, because we can help you any way we can. My co-host, Michael in Minnesota, had a bug. Apparently it was a 15-minute bug, and now he's joining us miraculously. It's a miracle. Michael, hello. Are you there, Michael?
Hi, sorry about that. Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just all of a sudden hit me, and
then
I
it's
was
gone.
Sick, and now I'm not. So
well,
I don't
that's
know
good.
What it was, but
anyway,
Mr.
Cox.
Yes,
go ahead,
I want to just give Mr. Cox my overwhelming sympathy for the loss of your daughter first. I can't imagine, and then to lose your beloved grandchildren on top of it. I can't imagine the pain you've suffered, and my sympathies just seem so inadequate, but. I feel terrible. That's all I can say.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Cox, Michael is my co-host and has been for quite a while, and he jumps in a lot when I seem to be floundering, so you may hear him jump in very quickly here. Levi Pace, do you have any other comments that you would like to make?
Yes. I want to know about the father. Has there been any new information on Josh's father? What is the status of him? He's still behind bars, correct?
Last I heard, he had a chance to be released, but media and people found out where he's going to be released to, and the place that he was going to be released to early, they decided they didn't want the news media trucks parked outside their halfway house for sex offenders, so they declined to allow him to move in. So he's stuck in jail still until, I believe, in March is when his sentence will be up. He'll completed his full sentence, at which time they will be forced to release him, and he will just be out wherever he goes. And so until that time, he's still in jail. And that's what I know about his current situation.
Has the police questioned him in regards to your daughter's disappearance lately? And is he talking or giving any information? Because a lot of people thought that with his fixation on your daughter that he may be involved or have some information about what happened to her.
Yeah, he's claimed his Fifth Amendment's rights against self-incrimination to discuss any questions about Susan's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
So the police asked to him, but questioned him, but he's refused to talk with them. And so obviously when someone takes the Fifth Amendment rights in an instance like that, then I still believe he knows where she is or he knows what's going on.
I agree. Has there been any talk about convening a grand jury to investigate him?
Yeah, I had heard at one time that there may be one impaneled, but I haven't heard what their status is.
Don't you think they should give him, some sort of immunity? How would you feel about that? Maybe you wouldn't want that. If he says, I just know where she's at, I had nothing to do with it. Would you agree to that, Mr. Cox?
Yeah, I think he belongs in jail, and I don't think giving him immunity would be a wise thing to do. But if he were to find where Susan is, if he could take us to where she is, then it wouldn't bring her back. It wouldn't. You know, I don't know. I haven't. That's a hard one for us. We know that if she's gone, she is gone and in a better place, and it's not worth, making a deal with the devil, and that's kind of what we feel we would be doing, dealing with him.
And, yes, Stephen Powell is the devil, there is no doubt. I have a fantasy. I would love to be in a room with him alone with just a few certain instruments, and that's all I'll say. I mean, that guy, I don't know how you have held your composure, Mr. Cox. You and your whole family, like I said, have held your heads high, and you have been so amazing throughout this. You have been classy beyond belief, and that just shows the difference. I mean, it is talking about night and day difference between families. You are the good and the light, and Stephen Powell is the dark and the evil. Let's hold on 1 second here. I may have something. Hold on. My new studio with all my new gadgets. I just don't know what I'm doing here yet. Okay. Michael, in Minnesota, you have a question. My co-host, go for it.
I would like to know why we can't use truth serum on some of these beasts that we have in our prison population, like Stephen Powell, to get him to talk. I mean, for heaven's sake, if we can waterboard enemies of the country, why can't we at least use truth serum on these people who hold the keys to some of these cases? I can't.
I agree, Michael.
Out.
My truth serum is...
Go ahead, Levi. I think either that may be unconstitutional. I think the ACLU would have a field day with that.
Yes.
But another option is, and we've seen it in many cases, and a very similar case happened where I'm from in Tennessee, the Perry March case. He and his father were both involved in the murder of his wife. He was an attorney in the Nashville area. She was a socialite. She came from a very prominent family, and she went missing in the late 90s. in around 2006. He was charged, and so was his father, charged with conspiracy to murder her. And what they did was they wired one of the inmates who was in jail with this man's father and got him to talk about how they disposed of her body. And he was convicted. They never found the body, but he was convicted along with his son in prison, and he died in prison. And that may be something that they may do in this case before he's released. They have a couple of months to do it, but that may be something that they will do.
And I can see Stephen Powell just running his big fat mouth off because his ego is much too big to keep under control. Mr. Cox, you know, you've been hearing about truth serum, about wiring inmates. My own personal truth serum would be alone with him with a potato peeler, a lime, and some salt, and that's all I'm going to say. But, Mr. Cox, what do you think about that? Would you, truth serum, I think that would be great, but I think Levi's right. ACLU would step in, and that would be the end of that. What do you think?
Well, I think he's in jail now. He's beyond the reach of law enforcement or anyone in the public like yourself. Anyone who would like to ask him some questions, he's got a granite walls protecting him and guards and barbed wire to protect him. In March, he won't have those. Because he'll be out, and then anyone who wants to talk with him, he won't have somebody to run, you know...
Interference
for him. So he'll at that time, you know, I think the safest place for him it would be in jail. And I'm hoping that somewhere along that line that he'll feel the need to go ahead and tell the truth, and because that's the safest place for him. Regardless of that, if in our society, it goes beyond just our laws, which are certainly way too lenient in favoring criminals and their rights. But I do believe in the free agency, our right to choose and decide things, you know, but. And the only problem with that is there has to be consequences, and I think that's where we fall down, is not making sure there are consequences to people's choices. And what I see is we basically allow the criminals to get away without consequences for their actions.
Amen to that, Mr. Cox. We do have just a little bit of confusion here in the chat room. Michael from Minnesota is my co-host. Levi Page is our dear friend and colleague. He is with us, as well as Chuck Cox. Chuck Cox is Susan Cox Powell's father. And there is going to be a vigil coming up. Do you have the time and place handy, or would you like me to read that, Mr. Cox?
I don't have it with me.
Okay, I'll tell you this. It's going to be December 6th, Salt Lake City Cemetery at the Christmas Box Angel Monument. And it's we're making it for Susan and her two boys, but it's basically there are Christmas Box Angel Monuments all over the country, and it's for all people who have lost a child. So you might want to check in your area. It's going to be 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. That would be 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Pacific. Mr. Powell, is there anything that we can do for you and your family? You have a whole army here waiting to help you, give you support in any way. Is there anything we can do for you?
Well, don't call me Mr. Powell.
Oh, did I say? Oh, God, I am so sorry. I keep, you know, I've got the names here on big, and I've been doing that all night. I've been typing the wrong name. I'm telling you, I have lost my mind tonight. Mr. Cox, is there anything? Mr. Powell doesn't deserve to be called Mr. Powell. Mr. Cox, is there anything that we can do for you?
Well, you know, I think keep your ears open. There's something's going to come through. I get the feeling that once some of these legal issues that we're dealing with are resolved, that I think the Lord knows where my daughter is, and I think that whether Steve cooperates or not, I think eventually we're going to find her, and everyone will know, and you know all our questions will be answered. So I'm just trying to be patient, and I appreciate the support of persons like yourself and your listeners, and just stay in there and stay with us and stay tuned. Thank you.
Mr. Cox, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to join us and good luck with your memorial and your vigil, and we will be in touch. And if there's anything we can do, you have my number. You can give us a call, and I promise you, I will never call you by the wrong name again, Mr. Cox, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, in fact, I have to make another correction. My gosh, it's correction night here. It's Jennifer Graves, not Jennifer Grant. Jennifer Graves, who wrote the book. She's Josh Powell's sister, and she wrote the book A Light in Dark Places. You know, Michael and Levi, it's because I have this new beautiful office in downtown Wanship, Utah, and this new studio. It's really thrown me for a loop. I'm used to having water drip on my head, animals on my keyboard. Nothing like that's going on. Levi, hang on a second. Michael, I don't know if you heard us talking earlier, but we were talking about Paul Walker, and I know you were really upset about that.
Totally. I wrote it in chat. I cannot believe that a Porsche isn't made sturdier with safeguards, since it's known as a fast car. You'd think, I mean, I know that I can't imagine how fast that vehicle had to be traveling, completely mangle it so much. I just can't figure that out. I'll
to go up in
my Mercedes. Gosh.
Yeah, to go up in a ball of flame that quickly, it was immediate. And you think about this, about cars now. This was a newer car. And like I said, I've read that that particular car is very scary to drive. But these were professionals, both of them. Even though Paul Walker wasn't driving, the person that was driving was a professional. But when a car crashes into a mountainside or somewhere, rarely does it explode into flames. You see that in the movie and TV. That just doesn't happen unless they're going so fast that immediately the gas tank is punctured and it explodes. Levi, what do you know about exploding cars? You have to know something. You know everything.
No, I don't know anything about exploding cars, thank goodness. But someone had put on Twitter, and it was true. I mean, this person was known for the Fast and the Furious series, and this is an example of art imitating life.
Mm-hmm. Well, like he said, Michael, I don't know if you know this, but he said, this is attributed to Paul Walker, "If one day the speed kills me, do not cry, because I was smiling." I'm sure he never thought that would come true, and that is what is so tragic. We'll be hearing a lot about this in the days to come, and let's keep our fingers crossed and hope we find out what really happened so maybe we can prevent it from happening again. We're going to move on here. On People Magazine's cover this week, it is a cover story for the McStay family. And I don't know if anybody has seen this yet, but it is very chilling. It shows one of the graves near Victorville, California, about 100 miles from the home of the McStays. And it shows one of the shallow graves. And it just sent chills up my spine. I mean, there was a carton of eggs on the kitchen counter. There was food. The dogs hadn't been taken care of. They were kidnapped and brutally murdered. The police are not releasing how the McStay family was killed. I assume they know how. I'm guessing it would be bullets. That's basically the safest and quickest way to do it out there, I would assume. I don't know. Also, there was no forced entry. So did they just open the door and walk in, or did they know their killers? Michael in Minnesota, my co-host, did you find out anything lately, or have you heard anything?
No, not at all. Not at all, and I'm anxious to read that People Magazine piece.
It basically just tells the things that we know, but it does have some very interesting pictures. And Levi, you and I were talking a little bit before the show about this. The Mexican cartel has been brought up a lot. In the People Magazine, somebody says he designed fountains, I believe it was. Joe McStay. Yeah, he designed fountains. And somebody in the People Magazine article, I can't remember who it was, said that they thought that the Mexican cartel wanted him to hide drugs. Perhaps they were made in Mexico is what it sounds like. They wanted him to hide drugs in these fountains when they crossed the border. She was theorizing that's what got them killed. Others think it was more personal than that. There have been a couple of people that have taken lie detector tests, apparently, that have passed. It is a huge mystery. And, Levi, we had Rick Baker on the show last week, and he wrote a book about the McStay family, and he thought that maybe one of them, the mother or the father, was dead, but the children were alive with at least one parent, maybe both. And he took off from his job, spent 2 years traveling around the world getting this book, information for this book, and it was fascinating. His book, No Time to Say Goodbye, I think it was the name of it. But last week, he told us that he was offering refunds to anybody that wanted it because he felt he predicted wrong. I don't think he predicted anything. I think he just gave us the information and told us what he thought might have happened. He was devastated. He felt like the McStay family was his family. He had spent so much time and his own money. He didn't make any money. Anything that was made off the book went to charity. So he did this out of the love of uncovering a story, and as it turned out, the love for the McStay family. Levi, are you familiar with Rick Baker at all? I don't know if you are or not.
No, but I do want to listen to that show and read the book, because if he knows them, if he investigated this case and feels like he knows them, then, you know, there still could be some good information in that book. And, you know, bringing up the Mexican cartels, you know, in some areas of the Southwest, it's extremely dangerous, especially close to the Mexico border. And I don't know how close they were or how close the bodies were found, but it's a scary situation. They tell tourists to stay away there. The local law enforcement is sometimes infiltrated by the cartel. They're corrupt. They're afraid of the cartel. And you remember what happened at Falcon Lake in Texas.
Yes.
Right near the Mexican border whenever I forgot the exact names. I'm going blank, but it was a couple who had just moved to the area, and they were riding around on a jet ski, and they encountered, some people did not believe her story. But,
I remember that.
I do too.
Right.
They did believe her, and they said she encountered a drug cartel. They killed her fiance or her husband, I'm not sure which, and she escaped. And it was just a dangerous area. And who knows if one of these people witnessed something, knew of something, was involved in the drug cartel, one of the adults, and they got mad, they got angry, and fell victim to them. It's a possibility, and it's probably something that law enforcement has been looking into.
They have been. They've been looking into everything. Well, I take that back. They have not. They felt, because of this grainy video shortly after of parents that looked like adults holding two kids' hands running across the border from San Diego into Mexico, they felt that was the McStays, and they pretty much stopped looking. They just absolutely stopped. And I know Patrick McStay.
Ridiculous, Patricia, because everybody knows that people are running across in and from to the United States and from the United States all the time. It's very
right,
common.
I know.
Because we have tax security there. So that's very disturbing that law enforcement decided, just because of that video, that grainy video, that they were going to stop looking and not look into any other possibilities.
That is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But is it surprising? It isn't, unfortunately. I mean, there's lots of great law enforcement out there, but boy, when you hear about Susan Cox Powell and what Mr. Cox and his family has been through, and how the police fudged up that one, and they fudged up this one, and that's what we say in Utah, it's fudge. So there.
Well, I don't know
Levi.
I don't know,
yes?
Sometimes the police have you know, really, they have their arms tied. Because I think Chuck Cox pointed out earlier that our system benefits the criminals and not necessarily law enforcement, and sometimes it hinders law enforcement to doing their investigation.
Mm-hmm. Got it. You're right. I absolutely agree. Michael in Minnesota, this is going to kind of be a short show here. We're not going to go quite an hour, but I want to give you a time to talk about anything that you want, anything that's on your mind, darling.
I don't have much to talk about. There's nothing. You know, I'm anxious to hear what, apparently in the Arias case, there have been media people that have been trying to get Judge Stevens to reverse her decision about not allowing the media to cover the penalty phase, because apparently they're saying she's gone overboard and is stepping on the rights of the people. I thought that was interesting.
Michael, these media people may do it. They may convince her, or they might take it to a higher court, because look at how long we all watched it. And this is, this is something that is interesting for everybody. And the Arias case should be, I think, shown on TV. I firmly believe that now, because so many people did care about and do care about Travis and their family. And I think that would be hard on the family, the extended family that Travis has. And they may do it. They may really do it. Don't you think it should be, Michael? Don't you think it should be open?
I've said that all along. I invested all that time in the first phase of the trial, and to not see the conclusion, I would never read a good mystery book and not read the last chapter where it all comes together. I don't know. But
crazy.
Again, the criminals in our system in America have all the rights, victims have none, and I something so screwy with that system as far as I'm concerned.
That is the truth. Levi, you're jumping. I can hear you jumping in your seat. What are you trying to say?
Yeah, well, I blog about the Jodi Arias case, and I covered it closely, and I work in the media. So, of course, I want it to be open, and I think it's unconstitutional to close it to the public, quite frankly. But I was on Facebook, I did see some people who are members of the community in Mesa, Arizona, and even a juror, Tara Kelly, who was served on the jury, who agreed that this should be closed to the public, because apparently people that were in the courtroom and that watched it said that the coverage of the case was not very good, that there were journalists who were there who claimed that they were inside the courtroom when they were not, and they were spreading false information, and that the media got a lot of things wrong, and that opening it up to the public would just create another circus-like atmosphere. And
that's
like
true.
Neville, because a lot of people there complained about the way that the media covered this case.
And that's true, but Michael, don't you think that's going to happen in every single case, in any high-profile case? It's just part of the whole deal that you get when you have a high-profile case. I bet there'd be merchants in that city that would love to have it open again. They made a ton of money off people, just like they did in California during the Lacey Peterson trial and the Jodi Arias trial. I started to say Cindy Casey Anthony trial. They made a lot of money in those towns with all the reporters and everybody coming in. Jodi Arias is the same way, don't you think, Michael?
Well, yes, I'm sure that is true. But I can see both sides. It seems to me that the time has passed, though. If they were worried about the notoriety or all the publicity, then the trial should have been closed from the beginning. The jurors should have been sequestered. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, but now to essentially grant a convicted killer's request to disallow the media is what essentially we're doing, because it was the defense who actually, asked for this, and they speak for Jodi Arias. She's a convicted killer, so I don't appreciate that her rights,
Michael,
are more important.
Michael, I want to ask you, and Trisha, did you see the interview with one of Jodi Arias' inmates behind bars?
Yes.
Yes.
She claimed in that interview, we got to talk about this, she claimed in that interview that she wondered why Juan Martinez didn't love her and she like everyone else did, and she insinuated that she wanted to have him killed.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Now, I talked to Beth Karras about this, Levi, and she said she had interviewed that woman, when she was in Phoenix, and she's crazy. And that's her quote.
That could be.
Came across nutty. She came across nutty, yeah.
Well, remember, this happens in a lot of cases. Remember in the Casey Anthony case, we had all these inmates come out and say, Casey Anthony told us this, she told us that. They're inmates, so you don't know what to believe. But if she did, the fact that she wondered why Juan Martinez didn't love her because everyone else did, to me, that rang true because that sounds like something Jodi Arias would say because she thinks everyone is enamored with her.
Yeah.
And she thinks she's beautiful and she can get any man she wants, and she wondered why Juan Martinez wasn't into her. That sounds like her to me. But I don't know. If Beth says that she's crazy and Beth interviewed her, then I trust her judgment.
You know, talk about two crazy people getting together in a cell. I mean, there would be – that's like crazy salad, you know. It's just you toss it all together, and who knows what the hell you'll get. And when they get out, they're probably saying all kinds of things about each other. Oh, it never ends. It never ends. There's just too many people out there that we've got to follow and keep our tabs on to make sure that they stay behind bars. Michael in Minnesota, I hope you don't get that bug again. That just sounded awful.
Yeah, it was strange. It happens every once in a while. I think it could be meds-related or something, but
right.
It hasn't happened for a long time. But
oh, yeah. Well, just get better. And Levi, give us the address.
What happened to your other guest?
This is what I wanted to tell you. Thank you. Yes, we were going to have a guest on. His name was Drew Siegel, and he is an attorney from Texas. And a woman I know who represents talent asked me to have him on my show, give him a chance, and she's got very good judgment. So he called me, and he was so funny and so larger than life. And he had me rolling on the floor. And this show was, you know, we're talking about Susan Powell. We'd be talking about the McStays. It didn't lend itself to lots of hilarity. So what I'm going to do is next week he is going to come on, and we'll give him his own segment. He has been, they're working on getting him a TV show. And he'll be good, whatever he does, because he is larger than life, and you know what they say about men from Texas, they have very, very large personalities, and he certainly does. So that's why he was just too darn funny to have on this show tonight. So you'll love him. He's going to come on next week. We'll give him his own 15 minutes, and believe me, if you've had a bad day, you just listen to this guy, and you will just roar with laughter. He's that great. Thanks for reminding me, because I've forgotten everything else tonight, and I've been screwing up like crazy. I don't know what is wrong with me. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't take LSD before I do this show. That could be it. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Gentlemen, thank you. Levi, give me your address, please, of your blog and anything else you want to promote.
Yes, I'm going to start blogging more. My website is levipageshow.com. And the last thing I blogged about, and many of your listeners may not know this, but remember the Duke lacrosse accuser, Crystal Mangum?
Oh, yes. She's been in the news.
The lacrosse players of rape. She has been having a trial going on. I don't know why the media did not cover this, but she stabbed her boyfriend and killed him. He was in the hospital. He died, and she was charged and convicted of second-degree murder, and it just goes to show you that she got away and didn't face any consequences after she falsely accused three Duke lacrosse players of murder, but now she's finally behind bars, and what a menace to society that woman was.
Oh, boy, was she.
And then killing her boyfriend, and apparently she had a history of domestic violence and pulling knives on him. So she finally got what she deserved, and she's going to be in prison for the next 18 years.
Oh, that is
those
that
poor,
is good.
Innocent people that she accused of that crime, I just can't get over. What's going on with Steubenville? Are you up to date on that, Levi?
Yes. The Steubenville rape case.
Right. Hey, Levi, stop one second. Levi, stop. Tell us what the Steubenville rape case is for those listening that don't know, and then give us the update, please.
That's what I was going to do. The Steubenville rape case was a teenage girl went to a party last year right before school was going to start. And she went to a party. She's from West Virginia. This town, Steubenville, is a small town in Ohio right across the border from West Virginia. She went with some friends to this party and a lot of football players for the Big Red Steubenville High football team was at this party. She had been drinking vodka. She had drank a slushie, a vodka slushie, and she was wasted and passed out.
Oh, my God.
And
two
high school football players were accused of raping her digitally with their fingers while she was drunk. There was even a photo that circulated on social media where you could literally see them carry her, and she was passed out, unconscious, had no idea what was going on, and they were carrying her. And they took pictures of this. They posted it on the Internet. And after the party was over, they were making fun of her. They were calling her a whore, a slut, and just saying horrible, asinine things about her. And two teenagers were charged. Malik Richmond and Trent Mays were charged and convicted of her rape. And if people don't remember this, the group Anonymous got involved in the situation. And this is a hacktivist group. You know, they wear the white mask and they're very big on social media. They got this into the national media spotlight. And many people say that there would be no trial, no investigation if it were not for Anonymous and people on social media. And apparently what has happened is there have been multiple people that worked for the school system, including the superintendent of the school system and someone who worked with computers and IT tech, that have been indicted after a grand jury was convened after the two teenagers were convicted. And the theory is, the speculation, the word around the Internet is that this was a conspiracy to cover up what these football players had done. Because this is a town, if you look at the football stadium, Tricia, you go on the Internet and Google it, it's a huge football stadium. It does not look like a high school football stadium. Some colleges have stadiums that look like this, and this town is just obsessed with it. I've heard locals say that adults are obsessed with these high school football players, just like groupies are, NFL groupies. That's how these adults in this town, adult women, act towards these football players, and that they're shielded, they're protected, and that there was a cover-up that involved the superintendent, the IT tech, and there was a couple of other people that were involved.
I think a coach, too, wasn't it? Levi wasn't a coach?
Not the main coach. I think that it was some other coaches that had allowed parties to go on inside their home the same night of the rape. And things of that nature. But I don't think that the main coach, Coach Reno, has not been indicted with anything. But if you followed the trial, during the trial, there was testimony about a text message that the defendants had sent to some of their friends and teammates, and they said Coach Reno's taking care of it. Like, they had told him about the sexual assault, what happened at this party, and he was, quote, take care of it. Many people say that Coach Reno, should have reported this, and he never did report this to the authorities. And when this case first hit the news, I remember a New York Times reporter was dispatched to Steubenville, and they were interviewing Coach Reno, and the guy acted like a jerk and said, leave me alone, don't talk to me, and something's going to happen to you and your family. Paraphrasing, I don't really have the exact comment that he made, this coach made to a New York Times reporter when they were looking into the case. And there's been some speculation that maybe further indictments will be handed down, and he will be one of them for failure to reporting a sex assault and covering it up, or that he may also be cooperating. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the coach, because the football field is named after him, and he's very highly regarded in that area. He's a celebrity, one of the most powerful people in that town.
Oh, that is just so ugly. Oh, my God.
I remember seeing the YouTube videos, and I was just appalled. Absolutely appalled at the behavior
I don't know if any of your listeners have gone on YouTube, but they can go on YouTube and search the Steubenville rape case, and members of Anonymous, the hacktivist group, found a video of a young man who was not on the football team. He used to be on the football team. He was not one of those charged with the rape, but this was a young man that some have speculated may have been at the parties and witnessed something. His name is Michael Notianos. He is from the area. He's a college student in Ohio, and he was basically, after these YouTube videos came out where he was making fun of the rape, saying one of the quotes that he made in the video, he was drunk, him and his friends were drinking, and they were recording him, and he said she was, referring to the rape victim, she was deader than Kaylee Anthony.
I remember that. I was going to say that, yep.
Oh, that's
horrible. It was so tasteless, absolutely tasteless.
He said some people deserve to be pissed on because there were allegations that this victim was urinated on. We don't know that for a fact, but we do know that according to some of the people that were there at these parties, that somebody said, I'll pay you money if you urinate on her. Interesting because some people have speculated that that young man that made those statements was at the party, although he denies it. It could have never been proven. However, there were a lot of people at the party that were taking pictures of this, circulating it on social media, and law enforcement has come under fire in that community for not prosecuting those people for circulating child pornography and for failing to report a felony because a rape is a felony. But they were not charged with a felony. They were charged as juveniles. That's another reason why this town has come under fire, the town of Steubenville, because the local prosecutors decided not to charge these two boys as adults. They charged them as juveniles, and I think, you know, they're about to be released if they're not already released.
Weren't they like 17 years old, too?
Yeah, they were 17 years old. The victim was...
Unbelievable.
You know what, that case is so convoluted. You have to know all the players. And I guess the hard thing to understand, Levi and Michael and everybody listening, which includes me, I can't understand this, is the thinking in that town, that let's protect the football players at all costs. And how often are other towns, how often do they have that type of thinking as well? How deep does this go? How wide is it spread? I think it's a lot of places. I think we have a long way to go. I thought maybe we were past all this crap about...
There is a similar case in... I went blank here, but it's a similar case. I forgot the exact state town. I apologize. But there was a young woman, some of your listeners may know, I know I have it on my website, levipageshow.com, but she, this young girl, was raped, and she was raped by the grandson of a politician, a former politician from this area. And the local prosecutors never prosecuted the case. He was a big football star. They never prosecuted the case. She came out, said she was raped by this man. Her friend came out that was with her the night and said, I was raped by someone else at his home. They found the victim's underwear at her home. The mother discovered her early one morning. This was in January. Discovered her outside with barely any clothes on the front door past took her in, gave her a bath, and discovered that there were injuries to her that looked like she had been sexually assaulted. And there are no charges in that case. And
there should have been.
The police say, well, the victim said she didn't want to press charges. And the victim says, you know what, I did want to press charges. She's even let her identity be out there, and she's given interviews all over the place to get awareness out there and to put pressure on authorities. So this happens a lot, especially if it's football players or people that have connections with people in power authority figures. And it's also interesting in the Steubenville case, Tricia, if you go on Twitter, people are fighting about this every single day. People are fighting about this. Are people in that town, and it just amazes me that thinks that the town and the town people are victims in this case, and that the football players are victims in this case, and they're victims of this hacktivist group, Anonymous, who should have never gotten involved in the case. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking a girl was raped. I mean, she is the only victim here, and there were so many teenagers in that community who made fun of this victim, who said awful things about them. I even remember the day that the guilty verdict handed down and they were sentenced to juvenile detention, that there were still friends of the football players, the defendants, that were on Twitter saying horrible things that I will not repeat about this victim. There were even some members of the community that had given out death threats on Twitter.
Unbelievable.
Oh,
so now, has the Steubenville victim, Levi, has the Steubenville victim ever spoken publicly?
No, she has not. She has not. She does have an attorney that has spoken, but she has not spoken. Her parents have not either, and I doubt they will. I don't think that I think they appreciate the attention that this case got. Otherwise, there would have never been any charges, and it would not have gone through the court system. But I also think that they are also tired of it at this point, and they are not speaking out publicly, and I think they want everything to die down.
That so poor girl. I can't imagine the scars of something like that. Can't imagine.
Your teenage years are supposed to be fun, and this happens to her, and it's just god-awful. Well, gentlemen, we do have to run. Actually, I have to run. I do apologize. I could stay here all night and chat, but I have places to go, things to do, and food to eat. Number one important thing here. Anyway, guys, will you join me again real soon? Michael, you'll be back next week, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You better be. Levi, you are always welcome to come on the show. You are a wealth of information. You have a plethora of information stuffed in that brain that is so amazing. Thank you for the Steubenville update. It's hard to follow. I mean, you need like a map, you know, with everybody's picture and who knows who and who's saying what. It's just an ugly, ugly, horrible situation. I would love to do a show on it if I could do one where we could really get down to the nitty-gritty. And, you know, if it hadn't been for Anonymous, this poor woman would not get any sort of her story wouldn't get out, and hats off to them because they did what should have been done, and that's expose this horrible situation going on in that town. Levi, thanks again. I do appreciate it. You take care, okay?
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Yeah, thank you, Levi.
And Michael, next week, I don't know if you heard, Michael, but we have a new sponsor. It's a great sponsorship. It's called Pause. It goes right along with what we love. Pause for Purple Hearts. It's in Palo Alto, California. And Pals for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. In other words, you have somebody that has post-traumatic stress disorder. What's a great way to deal with that? Through an animal. They concentrate on the animal. They train the animal for a wounded veteran has combat injuries. They train the animal to become a service dog for their comrades. It's a great way to help two veterans, get a dog into a good home, and get a veteran back on his or her feet. You can go to their website at www.paws, that's P-A-W-S, pawsforpurplehearts.org. Isn't that a great organization, Michael?
Oh, sounds amazing. Sounds like something I'd like to support. I'll go right now.
Go right to it. It is. It's a 501c charity, and it certainly is a worthwhile organization. It's time now that we gather around for a final moment of gooiness, legal gooiness, that is. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get upset about anything you hear on this show, my darling angel, don't get mad at the forums. They have nothing to do with it. You get mad at me, and I'll make you happy. I'll do my best, okay? Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, but we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.